Hi guys, thanks everyone for this meeting and making this possible. My name's Nikki and I'm still an addict. I was very grateful to be asked. I love doing service. For me, service kept me clean and it's still keeping me clean today. It helps me to always be at a meeting, even if I don't want to go to the meeting. And helped me to move around when I first came in. It's been a long time now that I don't prepare for shares anymore because it just drives me crazy and I don't end up saying what I plan to say and I go around in the end thinking I didn't say this and I didn't remember that and all that. So I just leave it to the day. However I'm feeling, that's what you're going to get. A little bit about myself. Unfortunately, I come from a very negative family. I was abused physically, mentally, sexually by my family. I was used. I was moved around a lot at a young age, so I never had a one role model. I've never had a dad, so I've never had a male role model in my life. I've only ever lived with my mum around for 5 years. And in that, it was really toxic because she didn't really know me. She didn't know how to be a mother, you know. But in the beginning, I resented her for it because I thought, you know, my dream was to live with her and live happily ever after. But that wasn't the reality because, you know, as a child, thinking, you know, being with your mother is the best thing, you know. And then it didn't work out that way. So I came around, I came into life basically carrying loads of anger, resentment, hate, being morbid, being told I'll never amount to anything, being beaten by family members, you know, sexually abused by my uncle and a family friend, just all that carried over. And then when I lived with my mum for that 5 years, her answer to everything, because she was basically a madam. She, at that time, she had loads of phones in the house and loads of ladies and of the night. And so her brilliant idea was to sell me to an old man at age of 14, convincing me that it's the best thing for the family. And of course, I obeyed. What my mum says was what had to happen. And by the age of 17, I saw that life was not for me, and I was being abused and controlled. And my family just treated me like, you know, bank card. Really, they wouldn't phone me to see how I am or how I've been or what I'm up to or even invite me for lunch or dinner or anything. They just phoned me to demand for things. And I didn't like that life. I could see my future wasn't going to be any different. So I decided I didn't want that life. I went to speak to my mum about it. So she, at 17, she's decided to kick me out to show me that what is out there in the street is a lot worse than what I have with her. And I'll come back running. And she was wrong. I loved my freedom. I loved being in hostels. I loved behaving like my age. You know, it wasn't good behavior, but I was behaving like what a 17-year-old behaved instead of looking after 14, 15 members of the family and me being like in prison. Although I used to say I lived like a life of a wag. You know, I had a chauffeur, I had a chef, I lived in Park Lane and, you know, I wore the best clothes. But how I lived inside, I was a prisoner. Anyway, so I moved from hostel to hostel. My first boyfriend was a drug dealer, of course. I got my first council flat, you know. I went Glastonbury 3 times. I traveled a bit. I had loads of fun and, you know, having a drug dealer for a partner for nearly 7 years didn't help the fact that drugs were there, and the majority of my drug taking was all free. I didn't have to worry, you know. And at the same time, I was carrying all this anger and hate and resentment. So I wasn't a nice person. I was awful, controlling, bossy, my way or the highway, selfish, you know, everything. I was everything, but, you know, in an innocent looking face. So I got my way a lot. 7 years down the line with my partner, I couldn't be with him anymore because he wanted to get married and have kids. And it just did not go straight in my head that I will marry a drug dealer and I'll end up visiting him every couple of years to prison. It just did not seem fair. So I decided to leave him. And then when I finally left him, because that was toxic, we used to have the police on our door a lot, and we had two dogs. It was just the fucking, the normal drug dealing boyfriend, girlfriend life. And when I finally left him, and he's finally left because he didn't want to leave, I got really depressed. Because again, I thought, I'm going to have a partner, I'm going to get married and happy and live happily ever after. That's what I thought. I didn't think, oh my God, it's the end of the world. I thought this one's going to be it, and he's not it, and I'm going to live my life and carry myself by myself in this world. And I got really depressed. I always had a job, and I developed alopecia through depression. You know, I lost most of my hair, and I used to go to a hospital, and they used to inject me all around my head, and I'd come out of the hospital with blood everywhere, and I wouldn't even clean it. I used to think it looked cool. Anyway, so one day the nurse broke the needle on my head. Pow. And she just said, sorry. And I just couldn't understand. You just left the needle on my head. And I never went back. So I decided I'm going to heal myself by myself. So I went to a Chinese herbal shop and got shitloads of herb or pills. I was on like 60 pills a day. I was hardly eating. I was drinking a lot. I was working 60 hours a week, and I was partying, and I wasn't taking care of myself at all. Before I knew it, I got my hair back a little bit, not as good, but I shrunk both my kidneys, sucked the life out of them. Went to the doctors, got told that I have severe kidney failure, and I was on dialysis for many, many years. And in that journey, I hated being ill. As a result, I never used to go on dialysis when I needed to. And I didn't think I was killing myself neither. So put myself in many comas. The police have broken down my door many times. I developed epilepsy, shingle, lupus, high blood pressure, all sorts of madness. And I used to always believe that it was the dialysis that was doing it to me, but it wasn't. You know, I found out when I came to recovery, if I looked after myself, if I took the medication, if I went to dialysis, I'll be better. I won't be perfect, but my health would be better. But yeah, so I came into recovery about 8 years when I was on dialysis, mashed up, seriously. I used to walk around with a stick bucket in my bag because I used to constantly be sick. I used to eat things that I wasn't allowed to eat and know that I was going to be sick. I lived off cup of soups for a while. My head would tell me if I had one or two cup of soups a day, I'm allowed to drink and take drugs. My ex-partner used to grow weed, so I used to grow weed with him, and then when he left, I started growing here and there, and I've been raided a few times, and all I used to worry about is my garden in my bedroom, not that I'm going to die in. And I never used to admit that I was killing myself. I would tell the police when they used to come to my house, I don't want to kill myself. I don't want to go dialysis. And they used to be like, look at me. Are you stupid? Because if not going dialysis, especially for a good few weeks and I can't even feel my body, is killing myself. But I didn't see it. I couldn't see it. And that's what the disease did to me. He made me very, very stupid. Because I always considered myself intelligent and smart and independent. I've never knocked on anyone's door for help. I've always lived on my own since I was 17. So there was loads of, you know, things that I was very independent and I could take care of myself. And yet, before I knew it, I was behaving in such behavior. I couldn't believe it. I was a little bit quite vain. I'd look in the mirror just to go and get a pint of milk, you know, and make sure my makeup is nicely done in my hair. And before I knew it, I wouldn't even look at myself in the mirror. I'll peep at people from my window, like, you know, curtains always closed. I remember breaking my intercom because I didn't want people to ring my buzzer, but you can press the off button. So, you know, I remember picking up my mobile and literally sitting on the floor and hammering it because I didn't want no one to call me. So why didn't I take the SIM card? You know, all that stupid thing. I remember sitting in the toilet, bottle of whiskey, bottle of water, knowing that I'm going to be sick. And I'll just drink, vomit, drink, vomit, drink. And it was a joke, you know. Nothing was enough. No matter what I take wasn't enough. I didn't care what I took as long as I get high. The high, in the end, I kept getting headaches more than feeling high. You know, whatever I'm smoking, I wasn't feeling the buzz. This is giving me a fucking headache. What am I doing? You know, 8 years on dialysis, I came into recovery. And now we start on recovery. The first year and a half, you know, I would never read the book. And I made sure I told everybody, I'm never going to fucking read that book. That book is boring. I don't read books. I read magazines. And I said that in a meeting. I can't believe I said it. But I can't. Because that's what I was like. And, yeah, so I don't want to ever tell another woman my business because no woman out there would never understand me. So I'm never going to get a sponsor. I can manipulate any man I want, so that's my plan. I'm going to go to meetings because I like hanging around with people, and I'm going to manipulate whoever I can and do my way. The first 7 months I stayed drinking because my head told me that alcohol obviously is not a drug, and that's forgetting that I got drunk and disorderly endless of time, found myself in the police station endless of time. I've lost lots of handbags. I found myself in bed, not remembering how I got to bed or how I got to my house. Forgetting all that. So 7 months into NA, something hit me. Something started clicking, and I went and took back my 6 months keyring and started again. But still, I didn't want to do the program. I just wanted to go meetings and do it my way. As a result, obviously, I relapsed a good couple of times then. Third time lucky. From the beginning of coming to NA, I knew it was good for me. And I'm the sort of person, if you tell me dirt is good for you, eat it, I would eat it. It's as simple as that. I knew it was good for me. NA presented something that what my head has told me all along, but I couldn't act it. That's how I believe I'm smart and clever. It's like, oh, I know this one. I definitely know that one, but why didn't I fucking behave like it? You know, why did I have to be so stupid? You know, and so I kept listening. Third time, I said, all right, I'm going to take this seriously now. I still didn't want to read the book, so I got it in audio on my phone. So anywhere I go, or just a bit of food shopping or dialysis and all that, I put it in my ear and listen. I kept sharing about getting a sponsor, I believe that I was walking on eggshells, not having a sponsor, being in recovery. That's what I believe, because I knew it's as important as being in the meeting, because meetings enough is not, meetings alone is not enough. So I kept sharing about it, and this lady, bless her, she came up to me and she started talking to me about her mum, because I always share about my mum, my mental relationship. And so I thought, oh my God, you're saying my story kind of thing. And we started talking, and she said, oh, temporary sponsor. And she was my sponsor for a few years until, unfortunately, she went back out there. But, you know, she's still a good friend of mine, and I'm keep praying for her to come back. The other thing was service. I love doing service, but in the beginning, my life was dialysis a lot more than NA, because I had to be in hospital 3 days a week, 4 hours a time, and every now and then I would be an inpatient. So I was like, I'll do service, but the only times I'm not going to be here is I'm in hospital. And then people started coming to visit me in hospital, sitting with me that 4 hours on dialysis, picking me up. I didn't have that for the whole of 8 years, you know, and I'm like, these people want something from me. But I started feeling goodness. They didn't want nothing from me. They just wanted to be there and we have a laugh, you know, and it was amazing. And I started doing the steps. I am different from other people, because so far I've never heard anyone say they hated the steps. I fucking hated the steps. I've done all of them once. I am willing to do them again. But I hated them for one reason and one reason only. Because I had to be honest for the first time in my life about everything to do with my feelings, about everything to do with God, to do with anything. There was no messing about. There was no just writing one-line answer in any of my questions. I had to be deep. I had to be me, and I had to be honest. And I had to be angry in some of it doing it. So, as a result of doing all that, this July coming on the 9th, I would have had my transplant kidney for 4 years now. And that's all thanks to NA, because for many years they refused to give me a kidney. They refused to put me in a waiting list. They refused, because obviously, why should you? I wouldn't look after myself. I didn't even want to take my medication. I didn't want to do nothing. I just didn't want to wake up one day. That's, you know, I kept praying to God, please take me, please take me. I came into recovery with no hope, no faith, nothing. There's nothing there. And NA, slowly but surely, you know, it's like when I wanted to pinpoint when I became an addict. It's like, when did that happen? When did I start going downhill? I couldn't do that. And then I started wanting to know exactly what NA is doing for me, that it's making me better. I can't tell you that, you know, unless I come to meetings, even reluctantly, when it was cold and I've got EastEnders and Coronation Street to watch, even when, you know, it's snowing and I'm wearing this jacket and I'm walking down the road and thinking, whose fucking idea is this? You know, but just getting in the meeting, as soon as I'm there, I start feeling better and part of. NA gave me a kidney. And then before that, a little while, my head was still not there yet. Even going to meetings, having a sponsor, there was still something missing. Because I'd done a recovery in the rooms. So I didn't know nothing about rehab. I didn't know, you know, and then when I heard people talking about it, I was like, oh my God, something's missing. I need to go to one of these places to learn a little bit. And then I started going around. I think it was a year I was clean, nearly a year. And then no one would have me. Everyone said I was too clean to go to a day program. And I got really mad, you know, it's like, oh my God, do you want me to relapse before you can help me? They're like, well, no, but you don't need our help. You need some other help. But I didn't let that stop me. Just when I used to look for a job, I wouldn't let that stop me. I just kept looking until I found the right place to take me. And I'd done a day program for 6 weeks. You know, I hated it for nearly 5 weeks and I loved it the last week, you know. And I was like, I saw everyone there getting an extended 6 weeks, an extended couple of months. They couldn't wait to get rid of me. Thank you, acknowledge. They just kept telling me how well I am. I'm like, no, I want to learn more. Can you let me stay? I wasn't listening properly. Let me stay. But they wouldn't have me. Obviously, because there was more people need it than me. You know, I'm looking on doing a therapy because I have loads of trauma and NA has helped me a lot, but I've got to get more outside help because I carried so many traumas in my life that every now and then they just come, whether I like them or not. I could be minding my own business, chilling, being grateful for everything I have, and then this sadness, this heavy weight just comes out of nowhere. I mean, NA got that a lot lighter. I came into NA not being able to sleep at all and insomnia for like a good few years. But before I knew it, putting on just YouTube meditation, at first I couldn't hear it because my head was nonstop. But before I knew it, my head started listening. You know, so I kept listening to it reluctantly. Even when I say, oh, this is not doing it for me. It's the noise is doing my head in. But before I knew it, I started enjoying it. So I had to retrain myself with everything to do with my health, how to live, how to talk to people, even how to eat well. You know, even everything. I'm like a reborn high power someone. I don't know how to call it. You know, in the end of the day, all I know and all I can, you know, suggest to people is to remember that NA is not just meetings, because I don't really like Zoom that much, but I need it. It's saving my life. You know, most things I've done reluctantly because I knew I needed them. They're good for me. This is good for me. So, and it comes as a package with a sponsor, with service, with the step. You know, I didn't like them the first time. I'm hoping I'll bloody like them next time. You know, I want to do the traditions because I like a little bit of control. But it's all good. And, you know, and my defects didn't go away. I just, I acknowledge them now. And in years, hopefully, I'm not going to do them. But I can't tell you I'm cured. I'll probably never be cured, but I acknowledge doing bad or going to do bad. I acknowledge that, you know, that I have to be a good girl for me, not just for people. And I leave it there. Thank you so much, guys.